Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Right, hello everyone. It's Red Men Radio, the podcast where we periodically talk a bit about Liverpool, but largely just chat a little bit.
And that's why I'm here.
And that's why we're here. That's why we're here. And hopefully that's why you're here as well. As ever, if you do like what we do, if you like the tone, if you enjoy the podcast, then make sure you leave a review on iTunes, Acast, Podbean, and what was the one we
discussed? Castbox.
Castbox.
There you go.
Who apparently featured us the other week, and that was really good. So great. If you're on Castbox and you listen to us through there, let us know, leave reviews and all that kind of stuff. That would be grand. And always, again, if you want to watch the video version of this, so if there's any visual gags that you feel like you're missing out on, go to theredmentv.com. Anyway. So we're just going to rattle through a load of questions this week because obviously we've got a match Tuesday night. We don't want to dig this. We want this podcast to live, Chris. We want it to live. So, timeless question, the classic. It's one that everyone wants to know the answer to.
Best Liverpool player ever.
Or more specifically, Christopher Malt, who wants to know what your favourite three hairstyles in LFC history are.
That's the timeless. Okay. Straight off the bat. Robbie Fowler, blonde.
Yes. Absolutely. Is that the one you thought that was going to be?
I thought that was going to be in yours as well, yeah. Probably pick a player, but the 70s perm was an absolute belter.
Give everyone the Keegan.
Yeah. Just class. Absolutely class. And third, something that's probably a little bit out the box, but Martin Skirtle when he came back with hair. Just that for shock factor more than anything else, Paul.
That's good. That was good. Who knew?
Exactly.
Everyone thought he was bald.
Yeah.
Everyone thought that's what he looks like.
Who knew?
And the exact opposite. He's basically the exact opposite of Raul Morales, who was badly, badly bald, and then one day clearly looked in the mirror and went, "Oh my god, I'm so bald." Right, gone. Just an aside on this. Do you think David Silva was going bald so decided to just basically sort it out? Or he's basically going through some sort of emotional trauma.
I've not really put much thought into this, but if I had to put a little bit of thought into it, I think Pep Guardiola thought that they were a little bit weak last season at Manchester City and they were a little bit of a walkover and he's told them all to toughen up. And David Silva's version of toughen up was just to take his hair off because he's not going to go and spend any time in the gym, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And must have that very much the Morales thing. Everyone looked at him and went, whoa, he looks like he's a bit of a hat. He's got tattoos and he's got a skinhead. Unfortunately, tattoos, skinhead and a beard is almost these days an absolute guarantee that you're a massive fanny, not dead hard.
Okay.
It's the hipster's look of choice, isn't it, these days? Some nice thick-rimmed glasses, maybe.
Yeah, and that's fine. I don't mind that. You know, I would like to have the choice to go there, but the fact is, I look like a young boy and I can't grow a beard.
It's going to be an interesting few years.
It is, isn't it? I'm balder, I can't grow a beard, so I can't even out the hair.
You just look like a newborn baby if you shaved your head.
Maybe. What's that film where he gets younger?
Benjamin Button.
Maybe I'm him.
I think you've got a good few years in you, mate.
I hope so.
It's not going that quickly.
It's going pretty quickly.
It's going, but it's not going, like, I mean, bear in mind, you're well in your 30s now. Like, that's a good innings that you've had so far.
Yeah, I suppose so. Like, but look at me dad. And here's the thing with me dad, right? He lied to me when I was a kid. And he told
me. Missed the generation.
No. I remember saying to him, we were speaking when I was dead young, like a kid, probably 8, 9, 10 or something like that. And I remember saying to him, why have you got no hair, daddy? And he basically lied to me and said, a car went past and blew it off. And you know, you trust your dad. Yeah. You trust him implicitly. He teaches you about footy and the right team to support. And, you know, he's 1 and 2 for that. But it wasn't until I was like 17 and we were having a beer and it just came up in conversation. And I was like, dad.
You liar.
Car didn't blow your head off, did it? And he was like, no, son.
No, son, you're 17. Also, if you swallow chewing gum, it doesn't wrap around your heart and you die.
I've not seen anyone to prove that or disprove it. So I'm going to just continue to not swallow
chewing gum. The new chewing gum thing is this Liverpool. There was no evidence that Liverpool weren't allowed to put a bid in for Van Dijk. That's what it is. There's no evidence, therefore, I refuse
to believe it. The amount of chewy that you see stuck to the floor, there are a lot of people out there that believe it.
Absolutely, 100%. In fact, I had it with me wife. We've been together a long time, but like at some point in that long time, I made mention of that, and it was like, there's a number of those. In fact, anyone's listening, if you've missed out any of these, like the old wives' tales about chewing gum, so the wrap around your heart, there's one, I think it's one like it might end up in your lung. There's ones, there's a few, and they're all complete. They're
Do
all
you know
complete
what it's made of, chewing gum?
Now, is it wax?
It's wax, Paul.
Yeah.
That's weird. Have I told you that before?
I know, it's just one of those.
It's one of those things.
Maybe we just had this conversation.
Yeah,
before.
I think we probably have. Here's one of the things that I still do or don't do that I was told when I was young. I remember walking up to the Chilwell Five Ways with my neighbour, Audrey. You won't be listening, so I'm not going to say hi to you. Except if you are listening, hi Audrey. I remember you fondly, especially taking me up to cut a bill to buy some sweets. And then the video store. She told me that if you step on the cracks, you'll fall down into hell.
And break your back.
I'm 34, I've never stepped on a crack on a pavement in my life.
Right, yeah, my missus can't step on... She calls it three drains, but it's effectively not. It's if you've got three panels of anything, and what you can't step.
Can't do that either. Can't walk under those signs.
The signs, because they'll chop you in half. Is want to move on?
It's just not worth taking the risk.
No. Out of interest, my favourite three Liverpool hairstyles: Fernando Torres, original Torres when he was blonde.
Alice Band,
blonde. When he had his power, like he was like Samson, wasn't he? You know, he lost his powers when he lost the blonde hair. I agree. The Robbie Fowler.
He lost it when he lost his knee. But yeah,
awesome. But it's easy to say here. I'll go for the worst Liverpool hairstyles of all time as
that
well.
That wasn't the question, though, Paul.
No, but I'm going for
do,
it.
Do your three favourites first.
You know what? Steven Gerrard's non-changing hairstyle throughout the whole.
That's a myth that did change.
Yeah, I mean, he had a crew cut, didn't he, when he was a kid? Like, but it's basically. It's like a number. It's probably like a number two and a number four on top.
What is it that Tom gets? Is it who was it that got a number six? Was it Tom?
Maybe. I didn't know. They had
I thought it went up to four.
We had this debate that he's got a number six and the barber's gone and he's so bored of saying there's no such thing as a number six, puts a number two on and shaves his head. Yeah, absolutely. Is Andre Voronin the worst Liverpool haircut?
The one that looks like Fernando Torres?
No, the undercut, the blonde undercut.
From a man you will remember had a blonde undercut, Paul, I am not going to say that Andre Gorin's hair was the worst that Liverpool's ever seen. What I will say is one of the worst footballers that Liverpool have ever seen.
Absolutely.
But I can't corroborate.
So if you've got, you can interact with the show always in the comments underneath if you're on the website, or as I say, leave a review if you want to comment as well. But tweet us at the Redman TV.
Well, we mates in school always. Went in blue coat. I had long hair and I had an undercut, and I got shouted at one end of the corridor for having my hair too long because I had it down. I literally put it up into a ponytail, walked down the corridor, and then the deputy head shouted at me for having my hair too short.
Yeah, crazy.
Pick one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Idiots.
Yeah. Well, it was they were both right and both wrong at the same time.
I had them off, so I just can't say why.
I want to talk about something, and Joel Do Rosario on Facebook asks this, and it's something I've been thinking about this week in particular, and it's just, why do we let Rafa go? Now, I'll put that in the past tense, as in, why did we let Rafa go? And I don't want to necessarily get bogged down into the minutiae of the what happened, all the Hicks and Gillette stuff and whatever. What I want to spin this on around is, what were the things that people hated most about Rafa Benitez? Because I think there's a lot of people, I've seen his name coming up a lot more, and people now look back on 13-14 as this spectacular failure, which it was, you know, and people look back on it as, like you say, and now lumping this all in, like, we couldn't defend for our lives. Goals.
There's a couple of ways you can look at spectacular failure. As in, it was a failure of spectacular proportions, or it was a spectacle that was great to watch and it also failed.
That's what I'm going for, liking that. But yeah, you know, because I think that the now common thread is that Liverpool can't defend, and we just play. Why won't we sort the defence out? Blah blah blah. Whereas going back to the referee, and that's now starting to get a real golden glow around it.
Yeah, man.
Because there's a lot of comparisons being drawn, and people are talking about the spine of that team, and we had the best midfield in the world, and you know, Torres, Hippier, Carragher, Alonso, Mascherano, Gerrard, you know, etc., etc. And people are like comparing the teams, the more recent Liverpool teams and what have you. But what I'm interested to know, what were the week in, week out complaints and the overriding complaints of the Rafa era.
Why are you playing two defensive midfielders at home? Was number one on the hit list.
Yeah.
Lucas was probably number two.
Yeah.
Part of the same problem. Two defensive was number three. And probably if you had to pick a fourth, maybe it would be something on the lines of rotates too much.
Yeah, absolutely. So the two defensive thing is the strand on this that I really think is relevant to a lot of the discussion that's going on at the moment. Because everyone keeps saying, I've seen a few people, I don't know if it's in Facebook, I've got loads and loads of comments, by the way, thanks very much on all this, but I think it's someone says along the lines of, why don't Liverpool get onto the fact that having a strong defence and a 20-plus goal a season centre-forward is the... Oh, there you go. Peter Mullen says, why can't the powers that be at Liverpool see that the formula for winning a Premier League is built on a strong defence and a 20-plus goal a season striker? Premier Leagues are won a lot on 1-0 scorelines. My point in this is that the last time Liverpool had a manager who genuinely knew how to organise a defence and worked on solid defence first, our fan base's heads fell off over the course of the 5 years of Rafa's tenure because we were too defensive, because we focused too much on defending first. And I think people remember 08-09 as though it was how the epitome of Rafa, but we built to that, didn't we? You know,
yeah,
you're talking about that was like the fourth season or whatever. That was what we used to get constantly. You said the two defensive midfielders at home, why don't we go a bit more gung-ho, etc., etc. And if nothing else, again, similar to 13-14 in this respect, most seasons you win the league with the points tally we got in 08-09. But it's another example, again, of it proves to me that there is no formula.
No, listen, there is a formula to winning the Premier League. It's winning games of football.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And however you go about it, Manchester City under Mancini had a better defence probably than they had now, but they still managed to score a lot of goals.
Yeah.
Leicester City, start of the season, blew teams away.
Yeah.
Second half of the season, lots of 1-0s.
Tottenham Hotspur conceded less goals and scored more goals than everyone last season. And
didn't win the Premier League. So, you know, you need a perfect storm, I think. If you're not the team spending the most money on wages and the most money on transfers, you need a lot of things to go right for you.
Yeah.
Leicester faced no competition that year. Chelsea just completely dropped off, and they probably shouldn't have. Jose Mourinho's probably got the best blueprint for how to win the Premier League right now, because he's the most experienced of all the top managers, apart from Arsene Wenger. But, you know, sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. And I think Wenger's blueprint's all wrong and he needs to start that again. And that's why Arsenal have been poor the last few years and not really challenging stuff. The difficulty we've had as Liverpool fans is we've tried things. But for me, the biggest failing on Rafa was the stuff going on around the club at the time. You know, the ownership of the club and stuff. And not being backed in the transfer market properly. Rafa had one of the best 11s in the Premier League, but there was nothing there. You know this.
Yeah.
And people who are maybe a little bit younger maybe don't remember this. But his squad wasn't good enough. And that's ultimately what let him down. And listen, Rafa Benitez is a great manager. And I think he'd still do really well at Liverpool if he was given the time. That's the thing that probably Liverpool fans haven't got now, because the further away we get from winning that Premier League, the shorter our fuse is. And, you know, rightly or wrongly, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's been a long time and it doesn't seem like we're willing to give the manager the time that he needs to build a side. Listen, this is Klopp's second full season in charge of Liverpool. Yeah. We've not had the best start. We've not had the worst start either.
Yeah.
It's early on in the season, and because of the way that Sky Sports has changed the Premier League and the Premier League's changed itself over the last few years, and because of the boom in social media and this 24-hour news cycle, everyone's patience is just a little bit less. You know, you're talking about when we go down to like YouTube and they talk to you about how to make people watch your videos or get them watching your videos, the first 6 seconds is so important.
Yeah.
Six seconds, like, we're not willing to give any time to anything anymore. Yeah. Does anyone watch adverts anymore? No. Yeah, exactly. It's 2 minutes, do you know what I mean? It's not even that much, but 2 minutes can feel like the world because you've got everything at your fingertips.
If you have to watch something live on the telly, how frustrated you get not being able to skip past the adverts when, oh my God, we're not so far removed from that being the only choice you had in the matter, unless you wanted to videotape it and come back to it. No, you're spot on. And the thing about the Rafa stuff again is that we were very solid, we were very compact, we were very well drilled, very well disciplined, very well organised. It was a smooth machine when we had the first choice team out there. This is a team that drew with, I think it was West Ham at Anfield, we drew 1-1
Monday night,
and we got booed.
I was there with my dad.
Yeah, people genuinely booed Liverpool off the pitch. We know that was that season as well. That was the season when we were as good as we ever were, and we probably arguably have ever been in the Premier League. And that was because we just got so bored and annoyed with Liverpool not beating teams they were supposed to beat.
Did we go a season where we won 15 and drew 3 or something like that, or was it 13-5 or something unbeaten at Anfield? And
probably.
And I think that might have been the season.
Yeah, because that was the season where the next season where we lost more games in the first five games of the season than we pretty much had done in the whole of the season before.
Yeah, it was three games we lost.
But that was the problem. That's the problem with this. And I think again, this is why I get. People probably might have sensitive, but I'm just getting increasingly wound up with people's reactions around the football, and not because people are entitled to be emotional, because football's an emotive subject, absolutely. It's more because, and I think it's just the benefit of seeing enough footy that I've seen it from different angles, and unfortunately, I think the strongest answer is you've just got to have all the money, and you've just got to go. You've just got to be able to do what Man City and Man United and Chelsea are able to do, and that's go out and buy loads and loads and loads of world-class players. Maybe that's just simply the answer, and if that means then Liverpool need to go and get new ownership,
maybe that's the answer for sustained success. Mm-hmm. But Leicester have proven that it's not the only way that you can win a Premier League. But I want Liverpool to be as successful as anyone else, and I think sometimes because we're 34, we can say like we've seen a lot of football, but that's not to say that there's people out there that haven't seen more football than us that lose their heads. But,
absolutely,
Because everyone comes at it from a different angle. It really ultimately depends on what type of a person you are and how you want football to play a part in your life and how you let it play a part in your life, to how you view the footy and how you view the things on there. Like, I have quite a long-term view when it comes to watching a season progress. But some people are so entrenched, and I'm not saying this is good or bad, some people are so entrenched that they can't separate the seasons. Yeah. And that's fine as well, what I mean? It happens different ways, Paul. So I think sometimes we do have to be maybe a little bit more accepting of other viewpoints.
Yeah, no, true. I think that the thing I get is that if Liverpool went, all of a sudden, let's say Liverpool got rid of Klopp and got a guy in who's first and foremost priority is to get the defence absolutely rock solid and sort that out. I think it would take even less time for our fans to all lose their heads again, because I think we've been spoiled over the last few years for just the glorious attacking football that we've played, and I think it gets, inevitably, we all pine for the things we don't have in life, because that's the way we are. We've got to, because that's the consumerist world that we live in. You're supposed to look around and go, I want that, I need that. You're supposed to get bored of the things you've got, because that you're driven down that path. And I think that I think we could all, even the people who are dead upbeat and relaxed or things, it's worth us all stopping for a second and being appreciative of the stuff that we have got and the stuff that we do well, because Liverpool, in an attacking sense, are the envy of most teams in Europe, and that's boss. And that's the kind of thing that it's great being sound defensively, it is, and it's winning games and blah 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 is great, but from a pure entertainment value, given the football's supposed to be escapism, it's supposed to be something that we're meant to be able to get sucked into and enjoy and blah blah blah, seeing your team score loads of goals is ultimately a dead good thing. I mean, inevitably, with all these things, a better balance needs to be struck, and we'll do a little bit about the defence because it's the only thing worth talking about at the moment. But it's worth noting, as I say, that the last time, the grass is always greener, isn't it, effectively? You know, when you've got a really attacking team, you want a team that's more solid at the back. When you're more solid at the back, you want a more attacking team. And inevitably, whenever you try to tip that, that's when it goes.
But there are simple. I agree with you, but there are simple things that this Liverpool side can do. You know, I'm not even going to say we can be more solid at the back, but we can drill a lot better on set pieces.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be a defensive side to be able to defend set pieces well. You might have to have the right type of player, or they might have to be switched on and stuff. But you look at Ragnar Klavan in the game at the weekend against Burnley, and he seems to pull out of going for a ball, because I don't know whether this is the case, but it wasn't his area, is what I watched it and thought, has he pulled out of that because it's not his area?
Yeah.
And you know, you need leaders on the pitch and stuff like that as well. So there are things that we can do. You know, the difficulty is in year two for Jurgen Klopp, or year two and a half, whatever, is that we are repeating the same mistakes. Yeah. And that's the infuriating thing for me. I don't care if we are more solid at the back, but stop making the same mistakes. Because it was, even to be fair to Brendan Rodgers, he didn't used to make the same mistakes over and over. You know, he'd try something and it might not work, and then he'd change it and we conceded a different type of fucking goal.
Well, no, but that's the thing that, but no, I disagree, because we're still conceding the same goals that we conceded under Brendan Rodgers.
But that's
still
not Brendan Rodgers' fault now.
Well, no, but I'm not saying it's Brendan Rodgers' fault. What I'm saying is, and that's what I'm saying, I don't think Brendan Rodgers gets more credit for this than Klopp does. Which is, I think, was what you were saying. You're saying at least he changed it and we do things differently.
I always felt that Brendan Rodgers was learning on the job.
Yeah.
And that was fine, but he'd put things to bed and the team would improve in certain areas.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, the defence still conceded loads of goals, but I felt like we didn't concede the same goal. It was always a mistake, or this, or that. Whereas Jurgen Klopp's, quite honestly, a lot of them come from set pieces. You know, that is an area that's needed to be improved on. We still make those same mistakes. Players are still making mistakes. We're still conceding sloppy goals. But Jurgen Klopp isn't a manager learning on the job.
Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp has been to the biggest games in world football, has won league titles. I would have expected him to already know how to deal with the basics of football, like defending set pieces.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't, yeah. And like I said, I don't think we were especially better at defending set pieces, because I think the type of goal that Liverpool concede and have always conceded is that it's second balls, it's something drops, there's a scramble and someone sticks the ball in the back of the net in our box, or someone goes in to try and win a ball rashly, gets themselves completely out of position, someone runs in behind and scores, someone plays a stupid pass, gives the ball away, we score, someone again switches off completely. And Because all we've done for 5 years is go, I don't know what the answer is to this, because they're all mad individual errors that let us down.
Who signed Mignolet?
Brendan.
Who signed Moreno?
Brendan.
Who signed Lovren?
Brendan.
Who signed Henderson?
Kenny.
Or
was it Kenny? Yeah, it was Kenny.
Yeah. So There might be your answer. You know, three of those players that I mentioned were all signed by that Brendan Rodgers side, and maybe it's, you know, it's so easy for us to talk about signing the centre back, and I realised that he signed Joel Matip and stuff, and he's a good defender, and I like Joel Matip and stuff. But when the main pieces of that side are still Brendan Rodgers players making the same mistakes, whose fault is that now?
Yeah.
Is that Klopp's?
It's interesting. We did a bit on Liverpool's defence on Social Club on Ball Street this week, and it was quite interesting hearing. We had Ped from Toffee TV and Adam McCall from Full Time Devils, and hearing them.
Oh, they'd buy a goal, Everton, though, wouldn't they? There's the envy you were talking about before.
Yeah, hearing them talk about it is interesting. What I also read Paul Tompkins' latest piece. He read his free bit this week, and he basically talks about the manager's decisions, and he basically alludes to the fact that on a good day, even for the best managers, you only have 60% of a manager's decisions are right. They get loads of things wrong all the time. And he talks about the defensive things, and he said he actually used Michael Keane as an example of this. Michael Keane was Liverpool's second choice centre back, effectively, and he had an absolute stinker at Old Trafford at the weekend. I mean, did you see the game?
No.
So he's playing right side of a back three, and he just turns around and just passes it straight into the midfield to Juan Mata, who plays Lukaku through, and he spoons his chance in the end. But he picked another centre half as well. But he also brought, we've mentioned Man City's defenders a lot, and he talks about them. But I thought the Michael Keane one was the most pertinent, because you're talking a £35 million or £30 million centre half that they've gone out and bought, which tells you, and I know it doesn't answer, because the argument will forever remain, there must be someone out there that we could have gone for in the centre back positions, absolutely. But for me, it backs up the same argument that we've seen from Man City with Alicia Mangala and Nicolas Otamendi, and you say Michael Keane, and you say Dejan Lovren. These are all guys that were relatively speaking, a lot of dough was spent on. They're all okay, but they're all absolutely have the ability to
listen. There's a
massive.
You're right, and there's a massive gulf in class between the top centre backs in the world and everybody else, and that's the difficulty. Is, you know, we've mentioned so many times over the last few years of signing players from teams who don't play the same way as you. Well, we're an elite side, and we play like an elite side, whether we get the results of it or not.
Yeah.
So there's not that many teams out there that can play like us and leave centre backs on their own like we do, and open into space and quite open to counter attacks and stuff. Like, you looking at Juventus, have got the best defenders in the world, right? And they have maybe they've got the best defenders in the world. One of the moves to AC Milan this season, absolute steal. The Juventus play like us, even? No, not really. Like, they play an attacking brand of football. It's not the same as us. For a start, it's three at the back, which would be a massive change for somebody. Everyone clamoured for him, and I include myself in that. I forget the guy's name now. He moved for, was it 20 or 30 million to AC Milan from Juve?
Benucci,
yeah, Leonardo Benucci. I clamoured for him. I was like, why couldn't we have signed him? But there's a guy who's played in Italy at the top level.
Fucking crucified 30, in the Premier League. Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah,
is that it's so difficult. Who's Man City's best defender? Vincent Kompany. And they are still only a good defensive unit held together by Vincent Kompany with one knee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's so difficult to buy top centre-halves. Like, you can do what Jose Mourinho's done, and you can drill a back four, which is probably what Liverpool need to do in point of fact. And I would include the goalkeeper. They've got a world-class goalkeeper there already.
Yeah.
That makes a massive, massive difference to any back four. And you've got a guy who's been there and done it in the Manu Matic, playing alongside the former most expensive player in the world, Paul Pogba.
Yeah. You're dead right in the... let's use Man United's defence. Because there's the thing for me, and maybe it is just that, maybe we're just consistency and the focus is what's letting us down, is that I don't see... I look at the players who've played in the back four for Man United this season and last season, and I don't look at them and go,
no.
I don't see Antonio Valencia and think, great, one of the best right-backs in the world. Now, he's been very, very good since he's been moved to that position. A surprise when you consider it. You know, in the last couple of years, they played like Ashley Young at fullback and all kinds. Yeah. Like, but Phil Jones he's made a solid career for himself. If he's still at Man United after all these years, he can't be as bad as people like to laugh. And I think he gets laughed at more because of the faces he pulls than his actual ability a lot of the time.
Like,
but again, Chris Smalling still in and around that squad. They bought Baye, who's fine, but you know,
Lindelof hasn't had a game yet.
Barely had a look in, if at all. And again, they play Daley Blint at left back and at full back sometimes. Rojo's had games at full back and at centre back.
They spent 30 million on Luke Shaw.
Exactly. And you know, and so maybe it is that thing of defensively. I just wonder whether, again, this is something just to elaborate on something that Paul Tompkins says about this. He brings back the old short blankets thing, and that. And I just wonder, and I think I mentioned this, or maybe it's the final word I said this, is that maybe we've just made a call, and that call is the only way for us to given the resources and we are ever to batter our way into the top four, is to put our eggs into the attacking basket and trust that we'll come good, because inevitably if we spend, there's only so much time on the training ground you can dedicate to anything, and if we don't dedicate all our time to this, we're gonna, you know what I mean? This is not an exact thing, because you're dealing percentages in these things, I guess. But in a very rough sense, it does look like we've gone, let's just be as good as we can possibly be in midfield and attack, and trust that the defence will be okay. And I wonder whether Mourinho actually flips it the other way to some extent. And I think that maybe he puts all his eggs into focusing the defence and the defensive part of the midfield, and then he just buys boss players and just says, go and do what you you know, go and do the bit, and whether we're, you need, maybe just need more money to do it that way. I don't know, but maybe that's what it boils down to, is maybe we just need slightly better footballers to make this work for us. Or that's where I'm back.
I've solved Liverpool's defensive issues, right? They are a trodden on bunch of defenders and goalkeeper, because they have to play against Sadio Mane, Firmino and Salah in training. Yeah. Their confidence must be fucking shot. Stop playing the big boys up front against our defence. Give them a little bit of confidence. They need to be training with the under-18s, lads, that they can stop.
Yeah.
So they go in there and perform better than in training. Yeah, that's it. Liverpool's defensive issues solved.
That'll do.
Pajak style.
Absolutely, that'll do. I seen mention about Burnley and how, you know, I get underestimated how tough a team I think they are. And it sounds like, it's weird that it should sound like I'm making excuses for it, and yet they've performed so well against the top sides this season already. And I do wonder about this, what you're telling your team to do sometimes, and maybe this is down to focus and game intelligence. When I think you're in a team like Burnley, where your sole mission is, look, here's what they're likely to do to you. Defend for your lives. And your focus is just on kicking the ball. Getting something on the ball and kicking the ball hard. That's a pretty simple focus. Whereas I do wonder sometimes we ask our players to all be 2 and 3 steps ahead of everything that's happening on the pitch, because you have to be, because in order for the team to work as a unit in attacking sense, everyone's got to know that ball's going to go to him, and when that ball breaks, it's all pressing triggers, and it's all fucking all this stuff that our basic message to our players is so complex at times that it is the simple things do get lost in the, you know what I mean?
Maybe, listen, that's a good point. I've never really considered it like that, but, you know, just thinking on it for a minute or so while you were talking, I think that's a really interesting point, because you can say it like from Burnley and stuff like that. Now, people may not know, but I'm a massive NFL fan, and you talk about offensive language and defensive language and stuff like that. I'm sat here in a Minnesota Vikings shirt, which is my team. Go Vikings. And one of the things that they talk about is, you know, moving from one type of offense to, say, a West Coast offense, where the language is completely different and they use numbers as opposed to words and words as opposed to numbers in different types of offenses and stuff. And so you might know the play, but you're learning a new language.
Yeah.
And that's almost sort of what you're talking about. You could move from Southampton playing, and Dejan, I'm looking at you, with two defensive midfielders in front of you and two fullbacks tucked in, to playing at Liverpool, which is a completely different thing. You're not thinking about hoofing the ball clear. You're now thinking about, I need to go past the man maybe and play a pass, or I need to play a pass into a midfielder. I can't just hoof the ball clear, because that's not how Liverpool play. So it's a really interesting point, Paul.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe we need to simplify the message a bit. And I think you can see that with Dejan Lovren. I've said this before, that when he's told to just defend, I think he's a perfectly adequate defender. When he's almost allowed too much space and time to think too much, I think it clouds his brain. He gets in a fog and he makes stupid errors. Maybe we do need to be a bit more agricultural, but the problem is, of course, everything is it's all part and parcel of the same team. We're asking our players to play out from the back. We're not asking them to defend. And although, because maybe there are just times in the game where it's like Klopp raises a flag, and that flag is, shut it down, stop trying to play football for 15 minutes, and just everyone just gets into the mindset of, we're just kicking this into the corners as hard as we possibly can. Maybe that's the way we do it. The only other thing, as we said, is that consistency, I think, and just saying, right, here's our back four.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse. And we're just going to play this back four for as many games as we can. The problem with this is, we've already seen Lovren's missed 2 games through injury already this season.
That's, you can't win on that.
No, exactly. And then also you're then left with a situation where you're the manager and you're thinking, okay, well, I'm going to have to rotate because I'm going to get these injuries. So I'm not... Imagine how bad it's going to be when I have to drop someone into this side completely cold. My only hope with this is, what I'm kind of driving at is that, and it's nothing but hope, is maybe this is one of them seasons where we go back to the traditional Liverpool model where we're a bit better in the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think under Klopp, we've started quite brightly in campaigns and we've lost a little bit of pace and momentum, particularly last season. I think we went a bit too hard too soon at the start of the last campaign. And I just wonder whether, because we are rotating and we've forgotten what that looks like, what proper rotation looks like, that we are spinning plates a little bit. We are trying to keep a few things going at the same time. We're trying to keep 15, 16 players match fit and sharp, as we haven't needed to do that in a few years.
I'll question you, and I'm not saying I'm coming down on either side of this, but if we were really rotating, do you think the front three would have rotated more? Because I'm just a thought. I don't think that's rotated as much as the defence.
It's not. No, it hasn't been, has it?
Now they're the players you don't want to burn out, aren't they?
It's true, but I think it boils down to, I think we've not rotated them in the traditional sense, have we? But I think we've seen, it would have been interesting if Mane was available
to see what would have happened. Because traditionally, I think your defenders can probably play more games.
Yeah.
Now, the issue is, we're thinking traditionally, but our fullbacks aren't playing a traditional style of football anymore. Yeah. So maybe those two guys do need to rotate a little bit more.
Yeah.
But the centre-backs thing, it's come down to Lovren's injury a couple of times. Maybe we would have seen a little bit more just play Matip and Lovren into some type of a form. See, I am wondering now whether we are rotating that side or whether it's enforced. You know, maybe we're just rotating those fullback positions.
And that's
what we're going to see.
I think we are. I think we're seeing limited rotation, aren't we? Because obviously we're rotating the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Fact. We are.
And Robertson's had two games. Gomez has had a couple, maybe three games.
We've seen what we saw, which I thought was one of the best examples of what our rotation will look like, is what we did for the Crystal Palace game, where we started Salah on the bench and brought him on with whatever it was, 20 whatever minutes left to go. We'll rotate in that sense where we'll pull people out. But equally, we didn't have Lallana or Coutinho in them, and we did still rotate Milner and Chan in the midfield as well. And as you say, we've rotated the fullbacks to some extent, although it still looks like predominantly Moreno's the first choice. I think it's hard to tell. I think you're right. I think it's a combination of
injuries, players who were injured pre-season.
And like I say, Robertson came in late, so he didn't really have a pre-season for us. So we've kind of held him back. Maybe we'd see more of him. Maybe we've seen him used the way he's been used because that's what he wants to see. That's all he wants to see from him. But I suspect we might see more rotation. We will see more rotation from him.
Interesting.
But it will be fascinating to see what happens with that. And I think, again, as we saw at the weekend, seeing Daniel Sturridge come in, seeing Solanke used off the bench, that's what we're kind of doing. But I think we've talked about this in the past. I think there is a core of that team that will play most games of football this season, and that's going to be Mignolet, Matip, Henderson, Wijnaldum, Firmino, Mane, I think, will play the most games for us this season. And then it'll be, that will be skewed a little bit by the fact that Lallana probably would have been one of them as well. And maybe Coutinho, but I guess we'll see. They're the guys who've got the best engines. They're the guys who are the best, in inverted commas, in their position. But we'll see how it impacts. But, the hardest thing, and we've said this on the final word, is that it baffles me the goals we concede, because I don't know what the clinical answer to it is. Is it just that we have players with a lack of anticipation? Is it a lack of understanding? I think there's some stuff that's definitely a lack of understanding, you know, with the players not playing together enough. I think you can see examples of that, but I think there's a lot that I can understand the idea that Van Dijk comes in and fixes a lot of it, because he's just a better player than Klavan and Lovren, and that's an obvious upgrade which would make us better.
Exactly. There are loads of people out there talking, you know, Van Dijk doesn't fix this, and for the most part, I would agree with that.
He doesn't fix it last week because I don't think he's match fit. He wouldn't be match fit necessarily, no. Unless we sign him early in the window.
Listen, I'm talking about when he's fit anyway, for a start. There are loads of people saying he doesn't fix our defensive issues, but let me just counter that with this. Vincent Kompany always fixes Man City's defensive issues.
Yeah.
So one player can make a huge difference to a side. Like, I'm not saying that he does, and he will, but I have seen evidence that one player can do it. And all right, Vincent Kompany's been a top centre-back for a long, long time now, but I do think Virgil van Dijk's on his way there as well. Mm-hmm. So, listen, you know, a lot of what I believe at Liverpool's mistakes are all the things that you mentioned before, anticipation and all that type of stuff, but nervousness as well.
Yeah.
Nervousness and a lack of trust in the players that you're playing with, I think also amplify the problem. And I think when you put a solid centre-half in with Joel Matip, then I think a lot the ones that I'm talking about might disappear.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, isn't it? I think and this is why I hope the goalkeeping situation will settle down come the back half of the season as well. You might see one of the three totally emerge as the best goalkeeper at the club. Like, it might just, like, Danny Ward might break out, or Karius might break out, and you're like, yes, that solves a lot of the problems we've got there, because I think that's part and parcel of the same thing.
Oh, you saw in the game at the weekend, Clavin leaves a ball for Mignolet to come and get, like. I, in that instance, listen, I know that the goalkeeper probably should have come to get it, like, but we've seen defenders play with Mignolet for so long now. You should be, by this point, anticipating Mignolet's, that he's not coming for the ball.
Mignolet's actually, because one thing I noticed from the weekend, is quite vocal, more so than I remember. There was one particular time I heard him shout, and I think it was one of them. I don't even know if someone even took it off him when he shouted. And it was one of them, is that in those situations, I say this as well in games, like, if you hear me shout, know that I'm there. If you don't hear the shout, I'm not there, and deal with it effectively.
It's not hard,
like,
is it? Like...
Exactly. But yeah, as you're right, I think it's weird, like the Van Dijk stuff or whomever. That's why I think it's important for us to absolutely get the right defender, because it is a complete waste of time and effort otherwise. And as I say, that's not to say that guy wasn't out there and available this summer. There was, and maybe that's a failure of the scouting department, maybe that's a failure of Edwards, maybe it's a failure of Klopp and whatever. The problem is, there's no way of 100% knowing that, so I see no sense in beating them too heavily with it. But it does look a problem.
From the games that we've seen so far this season, would you think that buying a centre back, even just let's say until January, would have been a good idea? So what I'm asking you is, do you think Clavin and Lovren are good enough backups?
I think they're both fine. I think it's very easy to when there's a bit of bad form, and that's the big story, and that's the thing everyone's going on about, to scapegoat players. And neither of them have put enough performances in to free them of being scapegoats. They're rightfully being the guys who are having the fingers pointed at the moment. Although I think Matip's not completely free and clear of having fingers pointed to be fair. I think they're fine. I think they're adequate. I saw someone tweeted me last night and said, because I'd mentioned Lovren not being, like, just not, I think I can't remember the expression I used, but it was on the lines of, he's not outstandingly terrible, he's not so bad, you know, and it's what he clearly is. It's like, look, it's not, because I've watched enough Liverpool football, and it, you know, it's almost exclusively Liverpool football over the years, to compare him to some of the terrible defenders we've had over the years. And I still remember the Bjorn Tucker Farmers, the Rigobert Songs, the Sotirios Kyriakoses of this world, that he's better than a lot of guys we've had in the team. So he's not categorically terrible. You know, those guys never had the good games that he had.
I suppose where I'm coming at it now is, before the season started, I would have thought he'd have been fine. But if they are going to get games of football, and we are going to continue to concede those same goals when they come into the side, then maybe they're not.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I think there's probably a logic. I think the logic that this team has been built on, pulling out the fact that we clearly wanted to buy a couple of players. We did try to buy a couple of players to solve these problems, and decided that they couldn't get them across the line, whatever. We've looked at it and gone, okay, last season, here's what worked. Our attacking footy is what we do, and I've said this again. We've bolstered the good stuff, and we've got okay. Well, let's compare our squad from this season to last season. Have we improved the defence? Well, the emergence of Trent has helped. Having Gomez back has helped, definitely. So we, if nothing else, we've brought two players in with some more. And Robertson. So we've brought more natural fitted footed players.
Have we improved our defence?
I think man for man, we've improved our the the stable of players we have to play in the defence, I think, is better.
Not the back four.
But I think the problem we've got with this is that I don't think we've improved. In centre-back, we've not improved.
And at right-back, have we improved quality. The starting right-back?
We've improved... No.
And at left-back, have we improved the starting left-back?
Yes. I think we have.
Okay. In that Moreno's better than Milner.
Okay. And I think, and a better fit for what we do as well. Okay. And I think in Robertson as well, we've now got two good quality left-footed left-backs. We've now got two or three good quality right-footed right-backs in the squad. So hampered by Klein's injury, obviously.
Where have we improved then? You've said we've improved the depth. You mean just buying Robertson?
Yeah, and improving Moreno and by the emergence of Trent and by the
return. We didn't buy them in.
No. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the Liverpool have looked at what we've got and looked at the squad.
He's a better player this year than last
year. September the 1st, we've compared our two squads effectively and you go, we've got more and better players at the back. We've got more and better players in the goalkeeping department. We've probably just about got more. I think we're more and better in a general sense across the board. But by and large, I think they've looked at it and gone, the defence had its issues, but it was okay last season. It got us what we needed to get. The big fall down for us was not being able to handle the loss of Mane and the loss of Coutinho. Mm-hmm. So what they've effectively done is go, right, we've bought backups for these players now. So we are therefore the defence, and I think this is what the gamble has been for this season, is they've gone in the centre backs that we already have at the club, they're no better than they were last season, but they're no worse. They'll be fine, but we've improved what we do at the other end of the pitch. So that's effectively what the gamble is. And the problem, of course, is that this is what happens in football sometimes. Players mysteriously just get fucking loads worse for whatever reason that may be or whatever. And I think that's where we've maybe fallen out. And also, again, we'll know it's five games into a fucking season, isn't it? You know what I mean? It might. Don't be shocked if Liverpool go three or four games with some clean sheets and then concede.
No, I agree with you. I was coming down a little bit harsh on it. Yeah, I do agree with you, Paul. I do think we are better. I question whether after five games we can categorically say we're better at left back than we were last season, because I think Milner's performances at the start of last season were better than Moreno's this season so far. I think Nathaniel Klein's a better right back than Trent Alexander-Arnold, but we've still got him in the squad. He just happens to be injury.
Yeah.
I do think we've got less depth at centre back because of Lucas going, and I never really rated Lucas as a centre back either. But the fact that when we seem to have three centre backs at the moment at the club as opposed to four is definitely weakening the defence.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think Klein's back in training now, isn't he? Which is good.
Fuck for that.
But only he's only back in light training, which is obviously still got a ways to go.
Not in the Champions League squad, so
he's still got a ways to go. But I think that's the thing. And this is the problem: is where we are. We can't afford to buy £30 million, £40 million players that we don't need to sit on the bench, knowing that if Klein comes back 2 months early, he's then fifth choice centre half, or you're fucking Joe Gomez off for whatever. And people say might say that's a bit naive, or we're being too nice in that regard. But I think Joe Gomez has earned the right to be in the squad.
I do as well. My issue is the left back situation, if I'm honest. Like, look, I know I'm not going to talk about centre backs because we've talked about centre backs all the time, but there are better players than Alberto Moreno around, and there were better players that moved this summer.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
That's it.
And if you can't spend £70 million on Van Dijk, and you do have that extra £30 million to spend, because that's what it comes down to. We're hopeful of probably getting Van Dijk in either the summer or January. So you'd need an added £30 million. I wonder whether having a really top draw left back would have been a better acquisition than Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. And I wonder whether maybe having, no doubts on Phil Coutinho and Adam Lallana fit from the start of the season would have changed us in one direction. Yeah. But I mentioned it before, there were so many things going on at the start of this year that I think it made and I'm not making excuses for them, I think it made the manager and the transfer committee a little bit nervous about where to spend that money, because you're not sure how long Adam Lallana is going to be. Yeah. You're not sure
Lallana's a shock, isn't it? I think this is the problem with Oxlade-Chamberlain. Someone asked us a question, like, why did we buy him now when we could have got him for free in the summer? And it's because I think we need him now. And I agree. And it's this feels like the Milner argument for me from last summer, where we were like, "What the? Why the fuck have we not bought a left back? Why have we got James Milner as the left back?" And then he was dead good. And there's still people saying, "Why have we bought Oxlade-Chamberlain?" Because for a start, there's too much banter flying around about Oxlade-Chamberlain. Because
ignore that
exactly. Swerve all that shit.
It's jealousy it comes from, mate.
Yeah, and also just people just like to have a bit of a laugh. And Arsenal fans love to wind up because they get wound up so often themselves. Because we've not really seen Chamberlain play yet, it's hard to make that.
Man, he's coming in some tough situations. I mean, you're on a hiding to nothing exactly. Coming on against Manchester City. Like,
and I think he looked really bright coming on at the weekend, and it gave me a load of encouragement about what he can do for us. And I think we'll see. I just think, again, this is the management's cross to bear. If we get Van Dijk in January, and it's a big if, I don't know one way or the other, and provided we're not fucked completely, we've not completely fucked it by that point, then that's a calculated gamble, because we've ended up getting, rather than spending £30 million on a Michael Keane who doesn't really improve what you've got, it's just more of the same. You've gone out and you've not wasted your money. You've not got a player you don't want on the books on draining your accounts or whatever.
I fucking hope if he signs, he's good, Paul.
Well, I know. I don't think any of us can. But we could kill ourselves by thinking like that, couldn't we? But this is the thing: is that if it all works out, and the Oxlade-Chamberlain thing for me is, we'd have liked to get him in earlier. He should have been up and running by the time Lallana got injured. Effectively, and that's the thing now, that I think he's been brought in as Lallana's understudy. Unfortunately, Lallana got injured before we even had him in, and now we've had to get things up and running. We're having to get him up to speed with how we play football, from Arsene Wenger's pass it to death to fight, battle, win, you know what I mean, all that kind of stuff.
Fortunately for us, I think that's his natural game anyway, so we're absolutely quite lucky in that regard. And I think over the next couple of weeks we'll really see probably some of the better bits of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. As I said earlier, ignore the fucking stuff on social media, it's an absolute joke, the amount of abuse that he's getting from Arsenal fans. And remember this, there are Arsenal fans giving him abuse, and if you look at Chamberlain's performances for Liverpool so far, City, no one performed, and it's a tough game to come on into. But look at the little bright sparks from the weekend, and that's what Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's about. And he's not even started the game for us,
exactly.
What I mean? Let's have a look at him when he starts the game and let's see what he can do.
I think, by the end of the season we'll all be looking at him the same way we looked at Wijnaldum at the end of last season. And that's the thing for me, is in hypothetics, it's like we've said, you've not got the 75, if you've got, we keep saying 75 million for the sake of argument, but whatever the Van Dijk money, if it's not being spent, then you made the suggestion, go out and buy a world-class goalkeeper, go out and buy an absolutely phenomenal left-back instead. But, there's clearly a plan, and the problem with football clubs is that we're not privy to the plan.
Yeah, that's the problem with football clubs, you're right.
Yeah.
I want to be part of the plan. Yeah. If I give them £4.99 a month for LFC TV Go, do you reckon?
I always said that if I won a mass of money, then I'd invest it in Liverpool, and all I'd want back is obviously return on investment or whatever, but all I want is just being able to sit down with the manager for an hour at the start of every transfer window and just saying, tell me what your plans are, and I'll have it under non-disclosure agreement, I'll keep it to myself, but just so I can know and just relax about the whole thing. But that's the problem, is it? We never know, and that's why, a lot of the criticisms around this, I understand the fear, because I have to go to games too. Now, to watch it, we spend a disproportionate amount of our time watching Liverpool, talking about Liverpool, reacting to it, responding to the stuff that goes on around it. It fucking hurts me as much as, if not more than most. I have to deal with it, but I also, in the absence of facts, I'll never categorically write someone off one way or the other on this
too
thing.
Many grey areas in football fandom,
and that's what it is about it ultimately. Is I saw someone saying, having a go about me, talk about what I was saying last week about on the comments below about supporting the players in the stadium. It's been a big bugbear of ours for a couple of weeks on this, and I saw someone saying, a great sports science, being noisy makes a thing. And it's like, the point of the matter is, if you don't, this is where we are right now. The only input we can have on this football team is, unfortunately, for the vast majority of Liverpool fans who will never be able to do this, is to just get in the ground and shout dead loud and shout nice things and encourage and support, because that's why it wouldn't be called, you wouldn't be called supporters in the ground, you'd just be called noise, wouldn't you, if you didn't, you know, if you didn't make a positive impact on what we were doing. And that's the thing that it's kind of been rattling around my head, because I've had a bit of a tirade on all this stuff this last week, is the bad news is that tweeting about stuff and kicking off about stuff online has precisely zero impact on what happens to the players on the football pitch. And, you know, you might as well just save your energy and get on with it.
Even in some cases say that I disagree with you on that, because I think it can have a negative impact, because players do see stuff and they're not seeing the nice stuff, they're seeing the fucking horrible stuff that people tag them in, and that is a negative thing before you go into a game. They've got, alright, they earn tons of money, I don't give a shit about it, there is still a pressure that comes with playing for Liverpool Football Club, and you don't need the added fucking negativity and stuff. And just to go back on something that I said last year, it's that for me it's all about, you know, we want to be treated like supporters and not customers. And, you know, this ban has been at Liverpool for ages now, customers, not supporters. But we act like a fucking customer when we're in the stadium, a lot of people. And they moan about the quality of the product that's presented to them for their £50. And the amount of times, it's not just Arsenal fans, it's fans of loads of clubs, mentioning the amount of money that you spend. You spend that money for the ability to go and support your team and hope that they fucking win a game of football. You don't pay for the win.
Yeah.
You don't pay for the quality of football that you receive. It isn't a fucking customer transaction. It is a supporter football team thing.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to put that money in and receive what you get, then you are not a supporter anymore, and you should quite frankly forget about football, because it's gone.
Exactly. Football is a fucking is a lucky dip bag.
It is.
You know, it's, you pay your quid or whatever, and you fucking open, you know, it's putting your money into one of those fucking ball machines. You're getting something. So you're paying your money and you're getting something in return. That's the transaction of it. You're getting something in return for it. But as you say, you have, relatively speaking, zero control over the output of that. And that is the gamble that you take if you choose to involve yourself with a football team. Now, this is not to say the wider issues don't exist, because you can't have an impact on the direction of your football club in a wider sense. If your club's going down the shitter, then you can step up and do something about it. But that's, you know, like I say, I would contend, here we are, the season's begun. Things aren't so bad, I don't think that everything needs to be set on fire and thrown out the window. That's just my opinion on it. But I am very much of the opinion that the transfer window's shut now. The transfer window's shut till January.
Can we forget about it for a bit? Like, everyone was bored of it.
Exactly. There will be a plan in place. There will be thoughts in place. There will be movements. There will be things that are going to be happening. Or, you know what? Maybe there won't, but that'll be part of the plan as well. It's a decision that's been taken by people who are far better at understanding all these things than we are.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe not. We'll never know. But yeah, like I say, I just want us to get back to that, into the habit of just having drawing as much fun from it as we possibly can.
Looking forward to Leicester tonight?
I am looking forward to Leicester tonight. I don't know why. This is the problem with all this. If we stay clear, a lot of the up-to-date match talk, because obviously recording this Tuesday morning, the match is tonight. People are asked us about the League Cup and have asked about the goalkeeper situation, blah, blah, blah. We'll know more. We'll know more about all this tomorrow. I remain upbeat. How I will feel in 24 hours' time might completely change on all this, but we'll see. Brilliant. Listen, thanks everyone for sending in your thoughts, comments, and questions.
How many questions were there? Two.
There was two or three in there, I think. But we went longer than I thought we were going to go on that. But that was really interesting.
What were we talking about, Benitez?
Probably. I knew there was something in there. But yeah, listen again to everyone who's listening. Thank you very much. Always go and leave us 5-star reviews if you can. If you don't want to leave us a 5-star review, don't leave us a review at all.
You listening with your proper reviews. Sod off. This is for you. I've just licked inside your ear.
There's some cool stuff happening on the redmentv.com. If you want exclusive podcasts, more of the stuff we do, more behind the paywall there. The paywall helps to make the free stuff possible. So if you want to be a Redmen TV supporter, go to redmentv.com, sign up, get a free month, and it's £5 a month for a shit ton of podcasts.
Doing loads of podcasts now,
man. Load of video content as well. And some surprises along the way as well, like interviews with Stephen Gerrard, which is all really good stuff.
Whoop, whoop.
Indeed. Thanks very much for listening. Walk on.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.